He's your voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
This week, you can add them to the list. A dozen birds at the Beardsley Zoo here in Bridgeport needed to be euthanized, according to reports, after the bird flu was detected at the facility. This deadly bird flu, it was detected on the zoo grounds, actually, earlier this week, when a goose that was found dead tested positive for the disease. Dr. Brown, you and I have talked about the bird flu I don't know how many times at this point. In fact, just at the end of 2024, we had heard about a backyard bird flu outbreak in a different part of the state. This month, we heard about another that happened in New Haven County. And now with the Beardsley Zoo, let's first talk about how common the bird flu is. I think when you hear about it, sometimes it gets people very, very nervous, certainly people who go to the Beardsley Zoo. But let's kind of normalize this. Let's actually get some reality in here. How common is the bird flu?
Absolutely. Good morning, Melissa.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for being here. Good timing, honestly. Good
timing.
Happy
to have me on a Friday.
I know, right?
Nobody has to wait an extra day.
I know. Yeah. Well, honestly, thank you for adjusting your schedule because usually you're right. You come on Thursdays. But honestly, this news at the Beardsley Zoo, it broke on a Thursday. So it actually worked out very nicely. So thank you.
So let me tell you, let me see if we can kind of get some numbers, at least the way we understand it, and then we can actually just talk through it as we do kind of logically on what we're seeing. Okay, so we do know that it's the bird flu. We know it's a type of flu. It's called an H5N1 strain of the flu. So there's a lot of flu that's in the world. There's a lot of flu that affects animals. There's a lot of flu that infects humans. This is not typically something that affects humans. This is actually, so sometimes when you hear deadly flu, you think, oh boy, you know, I'm going to get this. It's going to put me in the hospital. I'm going to be a ventilator. That's actually not necessarily the case. It's deadly to birds, as you heard about this goose at the Beardsley Zoo. So it's that type of deadly flu. There are only, right now, there's only about 90 human cases of avian flu. And the people who are at 90 cases, we probably have more than that this month already of just regular flu that we're seeing in our offices and in the hospital. So this is one of those things that we, again, are not seeing that many human cases. And usually the human cases are a connection between the bird and the human. So there's actually a direct connection. So people who actually work with the birds, who actually are bird fanciers, those are the ones who actually can get the avian influenza. We are seeing it quite a bit. I think this is the bigger concern, is we're seeing it quite a bit in poultry. And I actually pulled up some numbers before our call, and it looks like our number is about 150 million birds, poultry in particular, that have been affected.
Wow.
And that's obviously the big deal. And another term that probably everybody's hearing about, the deadly and highly infectious. It is deadly to birds and is highly infectious to birds. And that's part of the problem about what happens with this, is we have one animal, one bird that ends up getting infected, and the likelihood that the other birds in the direct area, or even because they're birds, they kind of fly around, they can likely infect other birds. And that can lead to a widespread infection in an area, especially in a zoo.
And you know what's interesting about this, Dr. Brown, is, again, we're talking about birds. I guess that's where, logically, I'm surprised that this doesn't get spread to not only just other bird populations more frequently, but even other animals. They could fly. So I'm surprised that it's not, I would say, a bigger – I mean, it is common, but I think a bigger deal, just because birds can move around. They could fly.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are we talked about this before. We have been seeing cows get affected. We saw and again, another number I pulled up, 950 dairy herds that have been affected as of yesterday.
Wow.
So that's obviously this is a big concern because this is our, this is our food supply.
Right.
And obviously that's a huge issue. And I know, egg prices are now over $4. You're going to see this also in the if we see more effect in the dairy, it's going to be an issue. And again, it has to do with the birds getting infected or the dairy herd getting infected, and then potentially they having fatality secondary to it. So, again, human related, I would still say this is very low risk to the public.
Right. I mean, and again, this year it was the person in Louisiana who died as a result of, again, his or her, I don't even know the patient's name, but their contact, yes, animal to human exposure. But again, the spread of it person to person is insanely unlikely, but also people getting it from being in direct contact is again, you know, it does happen, but it's not as big of a deal, I would say, as, you know, bird to bird, animal to animal, if you will, it sounds
absolutely
like.
And again, I think we let's compare it to other things. Let's compare it to the flu season. We're having a pretty rough flu season this year. I don't know if you heard.
But. Are you kidding me? We just had it rip through our whole family a couple of weeks ago. Yes, it was great. It was delightful.
So just think about it. I mean, you think of, you know, 90 people and think of, you know, how many people, and as it goes through sort of your family, you know, how many people are affected by the flu. And this is technically when people do even get it, as long as they don't have comorbidities. When I talk about comorbidities, I mean severe heart and lung disease. They end up doing fine with it. You know, right now the current flu is, you know, it's definitely playing a toll on people. It's definitely people who actually have, again, underlying illness and comorbidities are getting pretty sick from the flu and norovirus, which at some point we're going to have to talk about.
Yes, and we will. And Dr. Brown, something else that you had mentioned before, because I think that's where people are fearful. So first of all, for those of you who heard about what happened at the Beardsley Zoo, if you are concerned that you're coming into contact, first of all, I want to say that the zoo is taking so many steps. I've heard from the team there. They have, for example, any volunteers who worked with the birds, that's been canceled. Any of their programs have been canceled. The only people who are allowed to be in contact, they are testing these animals constantly to make sure that they have negative tests, which they did do tests as early as yesterday afternoon. And that the birds are testing negative. So they have found the ones who are infected. Those have been removed from the property. And they are taking every precaution possible. But for people who are nervous, Dr. Brown, just to make it clear, if they're going to the zoo and they're coming in contact with these animals, I mean, it is highly, highly unlikely that you are going to come home sick, essentially.
That is absolutely correct. And just like any other flu, there's a certain distance and a contact factor that you have. And,
right.
You know, most, you know, again, you're not petting most birds.
I was gonna say when you're, and I don't know, well, I don't know if you've been to the zoo lately, Dr. Brown, but I could tell you firsthand where there are more times than I'd like to count. You're not holding these animals. I mean, the people who are going, you're talking about when you see the owls or you see the hawks or you see even the barnyards, they are, you cannot touch them. You cannot. Yes. There are barriers. There's no way. So I mean, you're not getting the bird flu from these animals. I'm just saying.
Absolutely. Okay. And that's correct. And I think there's definitely simple things to do that I think are helpful. I have not seen any of the recommendations, but I know I've seen these recommendations before. You know, I know a lot of people have the urge, it is winter, to put out bird feeders. Probably would avoid that.
Okay.
Any massing of the animals, because it is an infectious disease and transmit just like anything else does in humans or in animals, you know, the closer contact of animals or any creatures, that's how it spreads. So basically, the birds breathe on each other.
Mm-hmm.
The closer they are, the more in mass they are, the more likelihood that if one of them has it, they can spread it, because it is highly infectious. So I would try to avoid, you know, if you have bird feeders, I would bring them in,
mm-hmm.
At least during, you know, again, and during these time periods. It is not natural for birds to, you know, certain birds to accumulate like that. They really are. They are sort of hunter gatherers.
Yeah, that's a really good
gatherers,
point. Yeah.
So going into the, you know, getting in there and doing what they're going to do. So again, I'm not a vet, but you know, I, as an infectious disease doc, I tell you that's how things get transmitted.
Yeah. So well, no, I think it's important to put that advice out there. And we're talking about the bird flu, the Beardsley Zoo in Bridgeport, the most recent location in Connecticut to have detected this at their facility. A dozen birds were impacted. They are taking steps to make sure they mitigate the situation and keep people safe, certainly. Dr. Brown, really quickly, you had mentioned before that this is obviously impacting the prices of eggs right now. It has even started to impact, you know, the cow populations across the country. The question people will always have is, how do I know if this is impacting the quality of our eggs, for example, or our milk? You know, could you just talk about that really quickly? So the potential of a cow or a chicken or something having this, and then it being produced in our foods that we eat. I mean, the likelihood
of that. Absolutely. And I'll talk sort of so let's start with the dairy, because it's actually even easier.
Mm-hmm.
So our dairy products are pasteurized, and doing that pasteurizing process, all viable parasites are eliminated.
So it eliminates the threat. Okay, that's so what I figured.
That's completely eliminates. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that, you know, the risk would be on you know, the only weird risk, and I would say that this would be extremely low, is if you got, you know, fresh eggs and didn't wash them or weren't careful about making sure you're washing your hands when you took care of them. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to a grocery store or you're going to somewhere along those lines, those eggs are clean. So it really would have to be surface. It's not going to be transmitted into the eggs themselves. And even then, that's not really how it gets transmitted. Again, there's always a risk with eggs and poultry for the spread of bacteria. During the process, viruses do have a tendency to die a lot easier. But again, you know, the recommendation is never to eat raw eggs. So again, I think that's pretty clear. So as long as you have cooked eggs, it's really not going to be an issue. The same with poultry, as long as you're careful when you're dealing with your poultry, and making sure you're washing your hands.
All right. And Dr. Brown, you had mentioned it earlier in this conversation, but neurovirus, there was a report actually by the BBC this week showing that neurovirus cases in England are currently more than double the expected number for this time of year. And again, if we've seen it, you know, COVID being probably one of the biggest examples in recent history, that when we see what's happening in other parts of the country like Europe, typically we sort of follow suit. We might be a couple weeks behind, but I don't know how many cases we have. Yeah. I would say, though, that the U.S. has been plagued with neurovirus. I mean, yeah, I don't have the numbers.
It's interesting because this is a tricky one to track.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what it is and what it does. And so you have to go a little bit on, just sort of what you're hearing. And unfortunately, that's sort of how we do. And I would tell you that we're definitely seeing it. And we see it, not only do you see it, but you see it when you have, you're an employer like Griffin Hospital, you see it within the staff, and then you see it within the patient population. And I could say that it's, again, difficult. The reason why I say it's difficult to determine if it's present is because the illness for most people is pretty short. It is nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. It's very acute. You usually end up having an episode, you know, after exposure, it can be 24, 48 hours, leads to profuse vomiting for probably, 5 to 8 hours associated with diarrhea. And then, probably another day or two of just feeling crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, to use the vernacular, and then it goes away. So it's sometimes called the GI flu and other things. So it's, unless you're testing it or there is a particular outbreak, and by outbreak I mean that you're in an area and everybody gets it at the same time, and that leads to testing. I know there's been some outbreaks in Rhode Island. I've been following some of their Department of Public Health. I haven't seen all that much in Connecticut, but I could tell you that we're definitely seeing it. But it is highly infectious. So this is one that we see a lot of every year. The averages that we see, and again, remember that it is hard to do, but we see anywhere from 19 to 21 million cases of this a year.
Mm.
So what a difference, right?
Yeah.
19 to 21 million cases, over 100,000 that are hospitalized, second to it. And the people who are at risk, children, obviously, children are more, it usually does skew a little bit more to children because of the hygiene issue.
Mm-hmm.
So the close contact with children. So it does have a tendency to affect children more, but it can be more deadly to patients older than 65.
It's terrible. I mean, it really is, Dr. Brown. And, you talk about the kids, certainly. Mm-hmm. And it's a tricky situation, right? I mean, not to get off of health and talk about education, but, we keep hearing about chronic absenteeism. And that really isn't usually health related, I will say. But as a parent of an elementary age student, it is such a tough situation. I mean, we kept Chase home from school, thankfully, only one of the days, because the other day was a holiday this month.
Right.
So he had no school that day, but I mean, Chase was down for the count for five days. And
sure.
And and I think to myself, these schools are in a tough spot where it's like, hey, if your kid has this, trust me, you got to keep them home, especially the fevers. And if they don't know good hygiene, this is something I have hammered into my kid, which is you better be covering your mouth every single time or I'm gonna lose my mind. But and washing your hands, for the love of God. I'm just saying, I mean, gosh, if there's anything we could do, it's teaching our kids better hygiene,
right?
Even adults, for that matter. But,
yeah, exactly.
It's a tough situation to be in because, you know, the schools are kind of in a place where it's like, yeah, we don't want to tell you to keep your kids home from school. However, it is so easy to spread. And I'm hearing about
exactly.
classrooms that are knocking out 8, 9, 10 kids at a time
exactly.
that are all out, right?
Exactly
so.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I think this
tough.
Is becoming a little bit more noticeable than it has in previous years because
yeah.
of the number of adults that are getting it.
Yes,
sure. It's very interesting. Again, adult illness, you know, a nausea and vomiting illness in adults is relatively uncommon for a normal adult.
Right.
So to start
because we built up our
immunity,
unlike the kids
exactly.
have. Yeah.
Exactly. But norovirus is one.
It's
that really
it's
will
rough.
Get us.
I could tell you on our team in particular, our morning reporter, he had it bad it was awful. I had it pretty bad just a couple weeks ago, and nobody even noticed. Tara, just saying. But it knocks you out. It's brutal.
Yeah,
it is brutal.
It really is.
Oof. So, well, I guess we're going to keep tracking it. Certainly, Dr.
We're
Brown,
you're definitely going to keep a close eye on that. And again, you know, make sure you know it does go. It comes with pretty severe abdominal pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, you have you know if it goes past that sort of hour, the time frame, it's pretty consistent with it. If it's after 8 hours, you need to you know seek medical attention.
Yeah.
Just make sure you don't mess around. And then make sure that you're, you know, even after that after period, make sure that you drink lots of fluids.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Dr. Brown, thank you so much. What would we do without you? We appreciate you.
My pleasure, Melissa. You have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.